Hello, this is a Football Fans Podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net, a football fans website for the 7-in-a-row Scottish champions. Some people might say my life is in a rut, I'm quite happy with what I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see the point. Things happening here today. So we're back following the fantastic victory over Hearts and the average draw against Kilmarnock, as Brendan Rodgers said in the post-game clips, which we will have for you at the end of the podcast. It was a typical 0-0 draw. In fact, maybe not having it at the end of the podcast. What I might do is I might have Brendan Rodgers on. Yeah, that's what I'll do. Brendan Rodgers, then the guest, and then Steve Clark and Jack Hendry. So who is this week's guest? Well, he is someone who has not been on the podcast for 6 years, so that actually gets us into a wee bit of a ramble about how shite the Huns are and how they have really weird expectations about what Steven Gerrard's going to do. So apologies that the first 10 minutes or so is talking about the Huns, but simply because we have Mr. Anthony Murray back on the podcast, first time in 6 years since the famous liquidation of the Rangers. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray.
Yeah, but not unexpected. You know, I think Stevie's done a really good job. He gets them very compact, very tight. I think maybe in the last few games they've tried to open up a bit. And obviously concede it. So coming to here and how we've been playing and scoring, he probably wasn't going to do that. So yeah, they were compact, tight, and if you can make the breakthrough earlier in these games, then of course it gives you a better opportunity. But we didn't quite do that. So yeah, it was what you would say a typical 0-0.
You made a few changes.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I've had the players available and fit with all my strikers, then I would have played a different system. You know, thinking of how you play against that really low block. So it's just too big a risk. Miss is my only fit striker at the moment. So, and he's coming back from injury, and he played great at the weekend. Just didn't want to risk him for this midweek, and then he'll obviously feature again at the weekend.
As you say, you don't want to risk him. The Scottish Cup final coming out with one eye on that as well. That's what the team is in terms of resting a few players. You and Henderson, one man came on as well.
Yeah. Tonight was about giving the guys the opportunity that have been on the sides, like Stuart Armstrong, you know, Patrick Roberts, Jozo Simonovic, these guys here that haven't had a lot of game time, like so young Calvin Miller coming in to get more game time, more experience. Young Ewan coming into the game, who's a talent. So really positive from that aspect. Guys getting onto the pitch here, giving me everything every single day, you know. But you're always hoping that you can make the breakthrough. With a couple of chances, obviously, first half, the goal disallowed, which was offside. It looked, Jack Hendry went close with the header. A couple of moments where we got in, but just couldn't quite make the final pass.
How much are you looking forward to Sunday?
Yeah, no, it really earned it this year. I think in terms of last year was fantastic, it was great. But this year there was a bigger scrutiny on us and a bigger expectation and arguably a greater challenge with the teams and everything else. So to have won it and won it the way we did the other week was really special. And Celtic and the history is about winning the title, and that's what's so important to them. And it's only the second time in the history that they've won 7 titles in a row.
That give you more satisfaction on Sunday than
yes. Last year. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So but our job was to come in, to perform well, play well, and then hopefully sign off the league campaign with a victory. And we know it'll be tough against Aberdeen because they'll have a cause to chase and fight for as well. So, but yeah, that'll be the idea.
Think Griffiths will be back for that.
Should be, yeah. Be back in training tomorrow, and Yeah, hopefully available for the weekend.
What about Craig Gordon?
Yeah, highly unlikely. I think our plan was to close him down for this week for three games and then see how he is at the beginning of next week.
Are you confident he'll make this final?
Yeah. No, I think that it's just a case of getting Scott some game time as well and letting Craig just try to give it every possible chance because he's a big player for us.
How impressive have you been with Aberdeen this season? And then last game of the season, still
fighting
for second?
Listen, we've actually played very, very well against Aberdeen. You know, they always give us a real tough game and there's Hummer away and we play well and, like I say, but that doesn't take anything away from them. You know, if they finish second at the end of the season, they deserve to be there. You know, they're a consistent team. Yep, they've lost some games to us. But like I say, we've generally played very, very well in all our big games. So if they go on and do that, then they deserve to be there. So he'll be happy with his season if he can finish second. I'm sure Derek, and then he'll rebuild in the summer again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Cheers. Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
So I'm now joined by someone who, I'll ask, where have you been? It's been 6 years since you've been on the podcast.
It is 6 years, yeah. It was. We were knee deep in jelly and ice cream last time I was on the podcast with Eddie.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. We just horsed the Hearts 4-0 or 5-0 at Tynecastle with Wanyama scoring,
right.
I think. That was the last time I was on, so it was happy days, and Rangers Football Club were on their way to an early demise. So we've had 6 years since then, so it's flown by.
What's happened to Rangers since then? The supporters continue to live in denial, and they think they're still a... It's quite interesting, because Eddie had put me on to the Heart and Hand podcast. I once tried it once before, and in the first 10 minutes, I put it off because all they were talking about was playing with their pubic hair. Genuinely, that's all they were talking about. So I couldn't be bothered with that because, you know, I'm not 15. And
I think I'm taking Schadenfreude to new levels because I'm addicted to it.
I've become addicted to it because they just don't, they still think that they are huge. And everybody's just waiting on what they're going to do.
I mean, obviously, it's a bit like, you know, the Rangers TV commentary, which we all now, you know, sit refreshing, waiting to show off on YouTube the minutes after we've horsed them once again.
Yeah.
And the best thing is to go back and watch their predictions videos. It's like, all right, Celtic pumped us last week 4-0. So this week it'll be better. And we go and beat them 5-0.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh, who saw that coming? It's amazing.
It's like the first one I listened to. They were talking about how when we played in the cup semi last year, they'd actually had a good account of themselves, and so the 5-1 game that followed had been a bit out of the blue. And I'm listening, thinking, no, we were all thinking, poof, it was only 2-0. We should have beaten them by 4 or 5. And we were all looking forward to the game at Ibrox because we were going to give them a doing.
And yeah, we couldn't wait.
Yeah. And listening to them justifying Dave King being a lying arsehole, as I keep saying, he's the Donald Trump of Scottish football. He just says whatever shite comes into his head, and because he does it to only those sections of the press who don't question him, he just flies in, says a whole load of shite, moves on, and nobody does anything.
The frightening thing about the world that we live in now is, though, that, you know, Trump and King, there is enough dissenting voices acknowledging this delusion and madness. But it just keeps going. It keeps happening. It's inexplicable. Why is the world gone this way? I can't get it.
And the other reason I think he's like Donald Trump in that if somebody produces evidence to show that Donald Trump's talking shite, it actually reinforces Donald Trump supporters that the mainstream media are out to get him. So
it's sort of their delusional line is reinforced by the conspiracy that the truth is no longer the truth. And
yeah, so when I was listening to a Heart and Hand podcast, it's the same type of thing. If anybody questions Dave King, well, you see, that's just because they... don't like the fact that we've got real Rangers men in charge. And you know, I listened to a bit of it today. They were talking about the takeover panel, and he's just showing that he's a belligerent guy who doesn't take no for an answer and likes to have a good fight. No, he's showing he's an arsehole who ignores the law and takes it, and it won't affect us. Yes, it will, because you can't. Nobody can do business with a company where it's got a guy who's cold shouldered by the FCA.
But one of the mysteries to me is the wool that he's pulled over their new messiah's eyes. And I keep trying to explain this. I mean, Steven Gerrard was obviously a talented footballer, but I was always of the opinion he was a bit of a simplistic footballer,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, you know, tactically, you know, Benitez built a team around protecting Gerrard from himself. Do you know what I mean? He loaded the midfield with scrappers.
Yeah.
That gave him the license to be the Hollywood passer, long shot taker, dashing player that he was. But there was always a sort of layer of protection behind him. Reminded me of Alan Shearer towards the end of his career. Just a big hard man that kicked the ball really hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't a lot of sophistication in the way arguably Gerrard or Alan Shearer played. And then we saw Alan Shearer's god-awful coaching career, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if, I mean, the fact that this is the gig that he's got, you know, would you not be concerned if the only gig that you're getting offered is the Rangers job?
Well, there's a guy,
why is there no better options if this guy's good at what he thinks he's going to be good at?
There's a guy Early, who it was Lawrence Donegan recommended I read it. It was a piece in the Irish Times where this guy basically said Stephen Gerrard's taking the worst job in British football because the fans have this unrealistic expectation that they're going to win the title every year. And listening to Heart and Hand, you know, they were saying, I know we said we thought we'd win the title, but we didn't really believe it, whereas now we do. Right? So they genuinely think next season they're challenging for the title. And he was saying that, you know, his point was the obvious thing to us, which is they're a club with no money against a team with £30 million in the bank and champion and further revenues and sellable players who they've got, you know, Bournemouth are back in for Kieran Tierney, and I believe it's circling the region of £20 million. We all know Dembele's more than that. We turned down £6 million for Griffiths in January. So, you know, there's three players that cumulatively their value's £50 million. If we were desperate.
The strange thing over here is that, you know, Liverpool's one of the shirts that you see in Slovakia, mm-hmm. because they had Shkrtel for so long.
Right.
You know, Slovaks will cling on, you know, their own diaspora, I guess. So they're all like Napoli fans because of Hamžík. And I guess they were all Liverpool fans because of Shkrtel. So they all like Liverpool and they all like Gerrard. So now that they're reading this, they're all like, oh God, you must be worried now. And I keep trying to explain to them that Klopp or Guardiola couldn't do this job. You know, the world's best managers couldn't turn Rangers into champions. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
It is an impossible job. Unless we shit the bed spectacularly,
mm-hmm.
it's an impossible job. And I cannot see us botching this.
What I don't understand, so on that, you know, I remember being told the first season that Rangers were going to be playing in the top flight. Somebody at Celtic told me that they'd done the calculation that running a club the size of Celtic or Rangers with a stadium that size and a training ground that size, to have a squad of the same level of player that Aberdeen have, you need turnover of about £30 million, somewhere in that region. So they've got turnover of just short of £30 million, and they are going to finish somewhere around the same position as Hibs and Aberdeen. So it's reinforcing the idea. They're not suddenly going to get a load more money. And here's an archive of things that really get me. See, if you're the head of marketing and sales at Rangers and you're chuffed to bits because you've signed the new Hummel shirt deal, and a week later it's announced that Rangers are going to get Steven Gerrard, which, despite everything, the one thing he will do is bring publicity and get all the Huns motivated to buy jerseys. Do you not go and knock on the door of somebody and say, could you not have told me that 10 days ago before I signed the fucking contract?
Yeah.
I might have been able to...
Because obviously, there was 10 other deals. He emphasised that. There was 10 other offers. Hummel was the best deal of the 10 they were offered. So obviously, every company in the world was banging on the door trying to get that Rangers deal.
But genuinely, if you're that guy, you would have said, I could have gone to somebody else. Or if I had known this, I would have gone back to Hummel and said, just before we sign this, what would you do if we signed a marquee guy as a manager that would get us worldwide publicity? It's the movement on the contract. Depends who it is. Stevie Gerrard. Because now that Stevie... And you would... Surely that guy could have got more money if they'd have known it was Stevie Gerrard was involved. If they just waited that, 2 weeks.
And that goes back to my idea that... I mean, here's one hypothetical. One, Gerrard was part of the Hummel deal.
even the people below Hummel
know that Gerrard's a shite bag.
Yeah. Bukta and Gola were the other options.
Exactly.
Match winner.
And, so maybe that's part of it. I forget what the thing I was going to say. Sorry.
No, I just find the whole thing... I tell you the other thing that's very odd that was pointed out to me by a Scottish journalist. 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, Rangers say, we're signing Stevie Gerrard, and the press conference is at midday. Even the Scottish journalists were struggling to get to Ibrox for midday. Rangers were then bombarded by, big guns, the main press in England, saying... We can't get anybody up to Scotland for midday. And they shifted it to 3 o'clock so that those papers could at least get their North of England correspondents up. But as it was pointed out to me, why didn't they just say, yes, we're having Stevie Gerrard and the press conference is tomorrow or the press conference is Monday? They just, it's like amateur hour. Even though they've got this guy, they still don't know how to brand themselves properly, which then gets back to the whole point of, I just can't see how, your point of, I can't see how they'll challenge us.
It's a weird one. The fact that, and McAllister's coming with him. Yeah, I never liked McAllister.
No.
Never. I think the first part is, growing up, you kind of support the Scots that are playing here, there, everywhere. And I think that night Leeds lost to Rangers in the Champions League, I just lost respect for every one of those guys. It's just that you guys are dead to me. You get beat by Rangers in Europe. I hate you all. So that was the first mark against McAllister. And then he went and had this slightly inflated journeyman career with some folks saying he was great and some folk, realising he wasn't. He was always crap for Scotland.
Yeah.
John Collins carried him on his shoulder for basically two campaigns, I felt, certainly before and after the penalty miss against England. And I just never liked Gary McAllister. Just there was always something about him.
Because deep down you knew he was a Hun.
That might be it. It might be. He was always itching to get there, but it feels justified in hindsight. When you I never ever laughed at Bill Cosby. I never did. Never got it. If people tell me he's a genius, I watch a lot of comedy. Never got Bill Cosby. Never the biggest fan of Louis C.K. No, my guys. And now, all this muck comes out. So maybe I've got some kind of sixth sense for potential dodgy characters in the future. I don't know.
But did you watch Rolf Harris's Cartoon Club?
It'd be the kind of thing I'd be bothering my brothers and sisters to change the channel. I was never really into it. It was like, is there no Transformers on, or can we not put a Back to the Future video in, or something?
So, but I suppose that the bottom line thing of it is, you're thinking to yourself, Steve, as you say, Stephen Gerrard. Well, one, he surely could have got better jobs, but two, of the jobs he did get offered, why did he pick the Rangers job? He must have done due diligence. Somebody must have taken him aside and said, must have advisors around him and said, look, that team's shit and those fans think they're going to win the league. and you know Brendan Rodgers is a good manager, and Celtic's turnover will be 4.5 times Rangers' turnover, and you're expected to beat Rangers. And see the guy who's promised you some money. He was told by the court to deliver some money a year ago. He fought the court for a year, then lost, and then was told he had 28 days. The court told him he had 28 days to put up some money. And on literally the 11th hour of the 28th day, he said he had money, but it was in another country. So now, 28 days after that, he's now making up another cock and bull story. He can't even deliver to the courts the money he says he's going to do. Surely somebody's had that conversation with him.
It must come back to, I mean, I think we all, a lot of us think, you know, it's going to be a John Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be fair, I remember the day John Barnes got the job, literally saying to people, I'm done, I'm out, I'm finished, this will be a disaster. I just knew it, you know, and it was. And that was with relative investment. You know, we went out and bought Berkovic and stuff. They don't have that opportunity. Also, John Barnes was inheriting, you know, Larsson, Viduka, etc., Mialbi, Lambert. There was good players there. There isn't a good player in there. They're less than bad. I only discovered last week that Holt and Halliday aren't the same guy. I knew there was a dud in their setup that whose name began with an H, who kind of cuts around the defence or the midfield and, you know, puts in the odd late challenge. I didn't realise they had two of the same guy. This was a mystery to me. This is new information.
Your point there reminds me of, now for about 3 years in a row, you bump into someone, or you're semi-friendly with someone who's a Rangers fan, who they've signed a whole raft of players in a transfer window, whether it's a January or a summer transfer window, and then they played two or three games, and there's maybe a Celtic Rangers game coming up in like two or three games' time, and they'll say, I bet you're worried about Jimmy Smith. And I'll be sitting thinking, I have no freaking idea who Jimmy Smith is.
Never heard of this man.
Jimmy Smith could be sitting next to us right now, and I wouldn't know who Jimmy Smith was. And you're trying to be polite, because it's maybe a friend of your wife's, you know, husband or something like that, and you're saying, well, you know, it'll always be a challenge, and you're thinking, I have no idea who this guy is. And then the team will be announced to play them, and either he's this wonder star guy has already turned to shite and is no longer in their team.
Yeah.
Or he's mentioned in their team, and then the players come out and you're thinking, I've no idea which one this wonder guy is. And he's usually a midfielder. And then he usually is anonymous in the game, disappears, and then you never hear from him again.
I've met a couple of lads over here recently that are sort of from the north of England, you know, Yorkshire or Manchester. Good lads, you know, football guys.
Yeah.
And one of them's from the same neck of the woods as Windass. Now, Windass is the one that kind of sticks with us, because, you know, we remember his dad. And one of them was asking me, one of them was telling me that apparently Windass is absolutely scum. Like, everyone in his town detests the man or boy.
Right.
And he's just a horrible human being. But that's just a random English guy telling me that. I've got no reason to believe that. But he was asking me how he plays
for Rangers, so of course it reinforces any prejudice you've got.
Well, I always say, he asked me, how's he doing? And I was saying, no, he always looks good for 10 minutes. And then does nothing for 80 minutes. You know, so he's not a major concern. You know, he has done more than the rest of them have done. Part of me believes if you dumped Windass in the Celtic team, he might not be that awful for 10 minutes. But then, you know, then he'll be mince again for the rest of the game, I don't know.
But the rest of them, do they get the Rangers are shite when you speak to those guys?
No, because they're hypnotised by Gerrard and just a sort of lapsed version of what they think Scottish football is. That was one of the interesting things about, you know, listening to Five Live and, you know, the football podcast last week, how quick they all were to jump into this version. You know, this is a league that they've been ignoring and lamenting for years, you know? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they're pivoting to convince themselves that, oh wait, no, big club, great big club, you know, that's a great big job for our pal Stevie G. And like I say, I keep repeating myself, but he must have nothing if he's there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the reverse of, you know, when you hear everyone that's interviewed, like the first Swansea guy that interviewed Rodgers,
yep,
was like, holy hell, this is a guy that's going to come here and do something. The same for the guys at Liverpool. You know, you get these coaches that have just, they've got a magic
mm-hmm.
X factor that every time someone sits down with them. The reverse of that is, you know, the Ryan Giggs situation.
Mm-hmm.
We're all told Ryan Giggs was a great player. I think he was a very good player over a prolonged period. I wouldn't say he was a great player. Maybe when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
That's neither here nor there. My point is that anyone that sits down with Ryan Giggs is like, oh my God, this guy's boring and has no visionary ideas whatsoever. You know, this is no Pep Guardiola. And he ends up getting rejected from job after job.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Gerrard's the same.
Well, you do wonder, because people within the game will talk. And the only other team that I know of that was interested in him was MK Dons. Who, again, you would think, if you're the owner of MK Dons, you might be looking, thinking, well, I know everybody's telling me that he's thick as mince and doesn't really have a football tactics brain, but you'll get bums on seats. Which I think is, I think that must be the mentality that they've got. The most important thing is we need money in the door, we need season books sold, so Stevie Gerrard will put that on. For anybody listening, I don't know if you've done it yourself, Anthony, for anybody listening, you should Google Stevie Gerrard and Chris Commons.
Yeah, I picked up on some of that. Yeah, some interesting backstory there. Alleged backstory, I guess.
Allegedly, yeah.
Yeah.
You should also Google Stevie Gerrard and gangsters.
It was a similar backstory. There's a lot of overlap. A lot of overlap. Yeah.
The Daily Mail actually seems to have somebody sent that to me and I Googled it. And every story seems to be in the Daily Mail. In fact, there was one just this week about some gangster had died that was one of Stevie Gerrard's pals, allegedly. Right.
Well, I'll stay away from that hot potato.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. I only mentioned that because at the beginning we mentioned the fact that last time you were in the podcast was talking about how shite they were.
Yeah. We were talking about Ibrox. We're behind schedule. Ibrox should be in Asda by now.
It should be. Was Dave King was still at Rangers at the time. The more things change, the more things stay the same. Alistair Johnson would have been on the board. Dave King was on the board, and Paul Murray had probably just left.
It was just before or just after the what do you call it, the Valentine's Day or mm-hmm. Administration Day, yeah, as it will ever be known. So yeah, it was great times.
Anyway, off the Rangers and on to the seven in a row champions. How was the Hearts game?
It was an interesting one, you know, looking at the fallout. I think the fallout kind of, you know, takes something away from what was a really good performance. I don't buy too much into this long grass, we can't play thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we played well. I thought that big gonk up front, Lafferty, you know, he took his chance well.
Mm-hmm.
Although something annoyed me that I saw on Twitter, that it was Ladbrokes tweeted, what is it, there's three certainties in life, death, taxes, and Lafferty scoring against Celtic. It's like he scored three goals in a decade, I think. It's hardly guaranteed. It's not like Dembele scoring against the Rangers. Or
Scott Sinclair scoring against Hearts.
Yeah, it's not something I consider a constant. It's more a blip. It's like, maybe on the scale of Chris Boyd against Celtic, it's prolific. You know, three in a decade, he's really flying. I don't know, maybe their expectations are that diminished that they get excited about these things. But to be fair, he took it very well. And his little chum, who I have some issues with, Naismith. Mm-hmm. You know, Naismith interviews really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everyone knows about his charity work and stuff. And as much as I detest Lafferty, because I know Naismith is like that, and you know he was pals with McGeady down at Everton and stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't bring myself to hate him, which his performances entirely deserve. You know, he plays like the biggest Hun of all the Huns ever.
Yeah.
Leaving his studs in, leaving his boots in, you know, just being a wee nyaff, really. But, I mean, watching these games, there's no surprise he doesn't get sent off or doesn't get a red card. You know, it's absurd how he gets away with these tackles.
So the thing about that tackle on Brown, the linesman and the referee had an unobscured vision of it. How, I mean, it gets back to the two things that I've got. The sympathy reffing, which I'll go on to, because that was evident in the Kilmarnock game. But the other aspect of Scottish refs are just shite. And missing things like that. And the consequences of crap refereeing. You know, you'll say to someone something like, when we lost to Killy at Rugby Park, I remember tweeting something about Kirk Broadfoot should have been sent off for. He was booked in the 89th minute. Abui Kwasi was booked 10 minutes into the game for pulling a Killy player down. And Kirk Broadfoot then committed the identical challenge six times. And the final time was booked the 89th. And everybody comes back and says, that didn't change the game. We were shy. We should have won it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No, it does change the game. Because see if Kirk Broadfoot gets booked the first time he does that foul. The five other times that the Celtic player was going clean through on goal, Kirk Broadfoot can no longer pull that guy down.
Yeah.
Hibs. Stevie Naismith should have been sent off against Celtic, which would have meant he would have missed the Hibs game. He scored the winner against Hibs. The consequences of shite refereeing are Stevie Naismith shouldn't have played against Hibs and he did. I just don't understand. And Hearts appeal it. He then plays in the Hibs game and then Hearts go nuts. All right, we'll take it.
Ah, right, and he's suspended for the last two games.
Well, the last game but of the season.
He's hurt Hearts, yeah.
The last game of the season, plus he's on loan from Norwich, so his second game of suspension doesn't affect Hearts because he's away.
And do suspensions travel over borders?
Aye, so he'll be suspended for his first game of if he's back at Norwich next season.
Really?
Or wherever he goes, aye.
Wow. I didn't know that. I never thought about that.
But it doesn't affect Hearts. So if Hearts hadn't appealed it, he wouldn't have played against Hibs and he wouldn't have played in the last game of the season, and then he would start, whether it's Norwich or whichever new club he's going to, he would have started the new season clean sheet. Now, because Hearts wanted him fit for the Hibs game.
So chances are it'll be in come July or August, Kilmarnock or Rangers serving a suspension.
Yes.
Because where else is he going?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
if Hearts aren't holding on him, it'll be Killy or the Zombies, really.
So, I thought there was also other Hearts players that were going down trying to do Scott Brown. They were doing the manager's bidding.
So, but I mean, I kind of part of me sympathises. You know, what are they meant to do? You know, they're not going to beat us at football, so they're going to turn. You know, they're going to reduce it to a brawl, knowing that the referee isn't going to punish them as he might. And they're going to get away with it.
Yeah. But then that's what my irritation is with Scottish. I mean, for a long time, I've no longer thought there's a massive conspiracy in Scottish football refereeing. I think they're just shite.
That's the same everywhere, though, isn't it?
Well, I think that every week I watch games in Scottish football, and I think if that was in the English Premiership, he'd have got booked for that.
The thing that I've noticed a lot, actually, watching Match of the Day this year is that, and I don't know if it's just because the English Premier League so fast, the amount of tackles that end up with a planted foot full on an ankle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miracle there isn't more ankle breaks. More like the one on Forrest. I'm not making excuses for Naismith, uh-huh. But the one on Forrest happens, you know, 20 times a game. I might be exaggerating, but a lot.
Yeah.
There's so many of them, you know, and it's just random players, you know, random player on random player. It's not guys that are playing against the Celtic or, you know, have it in for our players that we know are dirty. So I don't know, maybe it's just the increase in camera angles and stuff, you know. That's
it's maybe lots of things, the speed of play,
Yeah.
As you say, the players are athletes, so they're getting around quicker. People, you know, the whole thing about the way that, that people team, all teams seem to be building from the back, and so players are more and more teams are now playing to a player, even though there's somebody close to him. So players are getting the ball now in a position where there's an opponent closer to them. It's maybe a whole load of things like that. So,
I mean, how many times a game does Tierney get one left on him?
Yeah,
you know, when he's just sort of shaping that ball up the line or any pass up line, you know, at least once a game, Tierney is getting walloped. You know, so it does happen.
Although, as my mate pointed out, both Tierney and Lustig, when they get fouled, for the first 5 to 10 seconds after they fouled, it does look like they'll be out for the rest of their life. And then, and then they get back up.
That's true. And Lustig's a major issue with me. At this point, I'll bring up the pitch.
Right.
You know, because obviously all the complaints about the long grass. Watching the game, I think it serves some Celtic players. You know, I think Rogic looked as good as he looked all season.
Mm-hmm.
He had some beautiful little touches. Maybe the long grass is helping him. Maybe it's the close control. He benefits from it. I don't know. But I'm not as convinced that the grass was as big an issue. And I only bring that up with reference to Lustig, because there was at least one pass that was, you know, sprayed out to Lustig on the right. And his first touch ended level with his eyes. You're 6 feet in the air. That's not the long grass's fault. And I know that for a fact, because I've seen Lustig do it all season at every park in Scotland. I am done with Lustig, to be honest. If Lustig's our second choice right back next season, we have failed this summer. He's finished. He's been finished for a while.
Yeah.
We've basically had 12 months extra out of him. He should have run off the pitch at Ibrox after that goal in the 5-1 with his shirt over his head and just never stopped. You know, just go out in a blaze of glory, and he's come back and he's not a good footballer at this point.
Which we haven't finished the Hearts game, but it will go a bit. Yeah, what you said has made me think about the Kelly game. You're looking at the team for the Kelly game and you're thinking, Christian Gamboa and Marvin Compere aren't even making the bench for this squad of rested players to play tonight.
Yeah, I don't know what Gamboa's done. And that's what I feel for, if we actually go back to the start of the season, okay, if we're judging Gamboa by his performance, what, away at Paris?
Mm-hmm.
And we're judging Ralston by his performance at home against Paris, it's like, where was Lustig those nights? I genuinely think he's a shitebag. You know, going back to his injury, when he walked off that night in Paris, I was like, that's no real. This is a guy that doesn't want to be on the end of a 6-0 doing, or 6-1, because of course we took the lead, didn't we?
Yep.
You know, that's a guy that doesn't want to be around for that. And to judge Gamboa on a performance away at the new comp and away at the Parc des Princes, I can't understand it. You know, if we'd had 12 months of Gamboa in the team, he'd have played well more often than Lustig would have, surely.
One of the things that did sort of make sense to me was the concept that perhaps, you know, a lot of the time Brendan plays that, certainly last season, Brendan played that four that pivoted into a three with Tierney going up the wing. And I thought, right, okay, well, it sort of makes sense that if that's the case, you can't have a right back who does the same thing, because you can't have that pivot thing that you want, although maybe you could move him across. But anyway, so that sort of made sense to me. But it started to be a bit like, remember Martin O'Neill signed Janino and then never really played him. And then Janino played, I think it was away at Fir Park, and it was the best game he'd played for Celtic, and you thought, this is the player that we signed, he's now going to start playing every week, and he never played again, or virtually never played again.
Yeah,
I can't remember who it was, we played somebody, and Gamboa played, and you thought, that's probably one of his best games.
Yeah, I think everyone that's seen him play remembers the good games as much as they remember, oh, of course Neymar tore him to shreds, because Neymar tears everyone to shreds. You know, that's not Gamboa's fault.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he could have played better, but at the level...
As a domestic level, with some of the Jack Hendry stuff, you know, Jack Hendry filling in at right back, at a domestic level you'd think Gamboa could do it, but it was McGinty over at 90 Minutes Cynic who noticed that Gamboa has not played a game since he played his 19th league game for Celtic.
Ah, right, yeah. Now, so there's a payment due and we're avoiding it.
And I don't think it's we're avoiding it because we're skinned, but I can imagine a set of circumstances where the manager's having a conversation and say it's like £500,000, which is what the rumour that it's supposed to be, right? So say it is £500,000 and you've already had a conversation about Gamboa's not for me. It was a rush purchase and he did all right, but I'm going to move him on in the summer. And then you look down, you go, do you know what? See if he plays one more game, it's £500,000.
You can justify that.
He's got no future at the club anyway. Why spend £500,000 for maybe 2-3 games when I can get away with not playing him?
But we then, if that is true, and you know that's perfect business sense, I pray to God that we don't give Lustig an extension, because that's not the option.
Uh-huh.
That's not going to solve the problem. I watched the highlights of the Dundee United game the other day, and Ralston scored a goal, and then you know he got absolutely done for Livingston's 3-2 goal.
Yeah.
So you know, Ralston's got a lot to learn as well. But ideally, you know, Ralston's the guy that comes in for those games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is Ralston not there playing against Kilmarnock at home?
Ralston has also puzzled me, because at the beginning of the season, I was told about how Ralston is always wanting to be involved and do as much extra coaching as he can. You know, all the training sessions are filmed, and Ralston, once a week minimum, sometimes 2-3 times a week, would go and knock on the manager's door, having analysed his performance in training, and would sit down with the manager and say, you know, I've spotted this and I've spotted that about myself, and really wanting to develop. And the manager really liked this, because it was a guy with a learning attitude. And then I asked someone, round about, because remember he was out injured for a while.
Yeah.
And I asked someone, I said, you know, I thought Ralston was back from injury, because he's not making the squad. Is he still injured? And all I got, is he still injured or is he just no longer fancied? And I just got a reply saying, he's not still injured. And then about 2 weeks later, he goes out on loan to Dundee United. So it seems a massive turnaround from what he was without any... It's not like he had a run of performances in the team that you're sitting going, whoa, he's awful here.
Yeah. Which is, to jump to the Kilmarnock game, I wouldn't maybe have been a bit harsh. You know, when we bring through a young player and you're like, all right, he's got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've seen Tierney for 10 minutes and you're like, right, he's good.
Yeah.
We saw Sean Maloney for 10 minutes. We're like, yep, he'll be around.
Yeah.
I don't see anything from Miller.
No.
That my gut is going to be, right, he's the real deal. You know, best case scenario, my guess at this point would be, oh, there's a Ross Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll cut about for a bit, but then ultimately off to the, to be fair, Ross Wallace, off to the Championship to become a multimillionaire and have a long, long, excellent football career, but not in a Celtic jersey. It's harsh on Miller because, I mean, who's the guy that comes in after the best player we've produced
mm-hmm.
in my lifetime, you know?
But I was watching the Kilmarnock game thinking to myself, well, Callum McGregor's a better fill-in left-back than Calvin Miller.
Yeah.
I can see why Callum McGregor's played the odd game at left-back ahead of Calvin Miller. It's not that he... It's just simply because Callum McGregor's got a better football brain and is a better footballer in general. So the two things together means he can fill in at left back better than the guy who's learning to be a left back.
I take great smugness in the development of McGregor's career, because at the time when he was in the pro youth setup,
mm-hmm.
I had a cousin that was in the pro youth setup, and I watched a lot of pro youth football around then. And say the youth cup final in, I don't know if it was 12, it might have been 12, when we murdered Queen of the South.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 9-0 or 8-0 or 7-0, something like that. I was saying, and you know, I think I was still blogging back then, and I would have told anyone that was listening that McGregor's the Iniesta, the Xavi. He's the one that's going to make it. It wasn't a Twarjic. It wasn't a, oh, God knows who else.
Mm-hmm.
It was McGregor. McGregor's the one. He's obviously the footballer. So the fact that he has justified my faith in him 6 years later, is I take great satisfaction from that call I made back then. I'll have a Moleskine notebook somewhere with great writing about Callum McGregor, aged 18, 19. I got one right.
You're up there then with the priest, if anyone remembers him, a guy called Father John Fitzsimmons, who was down at St John Bosco's and also used to Scots College in Rome. And he was the priest at my oldest brother's wedding in 1990.
Right.
And as part of, as you do at a wedding, as part of the wedding speech, he talked about the benefit of being in the Scots College in Rome was being able to pick out some players that Celtic should sign.
Right.
And he said, there's a young guy Celtic. If we could afford them, I'd love to see Paolo Di Canio play at Celtic.
I've got a Paolo Di Canio story, which I might have told on the podcast many moons ago. But it was when my dad used to run the Tommy Burns Supper.
Uh-huh.
In Dumfries, and Dumfries Celtic Supporters Club get together, and one year my mum had secretly written to Tommy Burns when he was the manager.
Uh-huh.
And what Tommy Burns did was, I think he'd got my dad's number and he phoned. I think he'd planned to phone on the night of the event. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't going to show up, but he phoned. So Tommy Burns has phoned the house. And it's getting passed around, you know. And then obviously Dad has a blether with him for, I don't know, half an hour, an hour. Right. And then at the end, he's sort of getting passed around for each of the brothers and sisters to say, oh, hello, Tommy. And I guess I was the youngest. Me and my twin sister are the youngest. So I was probably the cheekiest and the most obsessed with Italian football in the mid-90s.
Uh-huh.
So when it got to my turn, I was like, all right, you know, hello, nice to speak to you, Mr. Burns. And you know, at AC Milan, Marco Simone is never getting a game. So if we go AC Milan, we can get him, sign Marco Simone. And obviously we didn't sign Marco Simone, but, you know, 2 weeks later in the Daily Record, there was one of AC Milan's bench on his way to paradise. So I'm taking an assist for that. Pushing Tommy in that direction. So, but yeah.
So it's because of you.
Saw it earlier.
Yeah. So because of you, we signed Di Canio, and because of you, Callum McGregor's now. I will take a bit of credit. The guy next to me, Ronnie, who sits next to me at the game, and Ronnie Dyler's last season was wanting all these players cleared out, and I said, I remember having quite a heated discussion with him that I would have kept Callum McGregor. I said, there's a footballer in there. I said, I think he's a footballer. Definitely keep Callum McGregor. He was all for, he adds nothing, he's useless. And I said, no, you can't. Callum McGregor's a player who should always be in and around the Celtic squad, because he'll always come in and he'll not let you down when he comes in the game.
Yeah. And as long as your football team is playing football.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe McGregor wouldn't have been a great Martin O'Neill player. But he's certainly a good Brendan Rodgers player, and he'd have been a great Tommy Burns player.
Yeah.
You know, a proper football team, moving the ball around and stuff.
So, after your character assassination of Lustig, I'll get back and finish the Hearts game. My nephew thought my brother and I were very harsh. We were talking about the Hearts game again during the Kilmarnock game, and we were talking about how Scott Sinclair nearly managed to miss his goal.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, it's like it was almost like he tried.
Yeah.
You pick out the guy in the middle of the goal.
Yeah, the whole goal to shoot at didn't, I would, you know, 2-3 yards out, and it was only because the guy was sort of falling backwards.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. I remember Commons went from a good first season to a pretty mediocre second season. Mm-hmm. And then he picked up towards the end of his Celtic career. So it is possible for, you know, to have it, to not have it, and to get it back. And then Stefan Johansson, Scottish Player of the Year, mediocre follow-up season. But it's such a strange one.
Yeah, I mean, that was his first league goal. That was Scott Sinclair's first league goal since in 2018. His only other goal in 2018 had been Brechin.
Even then, it's a tap-in. You know, it's not like... We're not coming away from saying, oh, at least he was good today. You know, really, he's bringing nothing to the party whatsoever right now.
No.
Very odd. For a player who's, we've seen, is so good. But as I think it was my brother pointed out to me, you know, there's a reason he's at Celtic Park. Mm-hmm. You know, if he was as good as he was last season, every season, he'd be playing in the English Premier League. So that there's clearly a fault line in his DNA that isn't, you know, he isn't a world-class player. He's a very good player at times. And now, not that.
No. And I know it's an old cliche about goals change game, but it was prior to the Kilmarnock game, and they showed you some goals, they showed you some clips from the Stop in the Ten season of 20 years ago. And the thing that really struck me was how many top corner crackers we scored from about 16 to 25 yards out. Yeah. The amount of shots that flew in top corner. And see, last season, how many goals did Scott Sinclair score?
Yeah, shaping in at the corner.
Shaping it, and none this season. And it was, I think it was on maybe the last podcast or the podcast before that I'd mentioned that I'd seen the Celtic by Numbers tweeting about the expected goals. And the expected goals by Celtic this season is roughly the same as last season. But last season we overachieved and scored more than expected goals. And this season we've underachieved and scored less. And the big thing is, because last season, reasonably early on into a game, someone would hit a shot from the edge of the box that went into the top corner. And if one of those was Sinclair, it just changes the whole dynamic. I mean, the Kilmarnock game in midweek, if the Simonovic header hadn't been chopped off, that would have been a different game.
I think it's been such a disappointment, and going back to that 10 in a row season, or stopping the 10 in a row, was I was the guy last summer that was arguing that Sinclair's first season was as good as Larsson's first season. And we then know that, you know, Larsson had a good first season, but he had a great second season, and then he went on to be the Messiah. I was arguing that, oh God, Sinclair was so good first year, what's he going to do next? And he's chosen the Stefan Johansson route rather than the Henrik Larsson route, well, which is slightly disappointing.
I do have to say that myself and Eddie Pearson on the Celtic Underground votes for Player of the Year, we both had Scott Sinclair in fifth place last season. Yeah, both of us were saying the same thing. He's actually not that great in a lot of games, but he scores a goal and so nobody notices.
Well, that was a criticism I always had of Alan Thompson. I always thought Alan Thompson would have bad, bad games, and just at the point where he was due to get dropped, he'd score at Ibrox, or he'd score against Rangers, and everyone would forget that he'd basically played himself out of the team until that moment. So I understand why you'd say that, but then I'd, the American sports fans, you know, the clutch player, the guy that does the big thing, I think he did enough last season for me to believe at this time last year that he was the difference maker. You know, obviously Rogic, Roberts, etc. came in and did a job. But I thought Sinclair was the one that stayed. And like you say, all those goals that he shaped into the top corner, like Bergkamp or Henri, you know, that's my favourite kind of goal. So if you're the guy that does that 5-10 times a season, that's going to score points for me, you know?
On the Kilmarnock game, I was really angry when we drew with Dundee a couple of weeks ago, because I just thought it was a really crap performance. I was a bit more forgiving in the Kilmarnock game because we've won the league, doesn't really matter. The manager has rested players because he doesn't want people picking up an injury before the cup final.
Yeah.
So if that mentality is getting across to the players, then the players are also going to be, who are playing, are also going to be thinking, don't want to get an injury before the cup final. And then... Also, we played with no striker. So, what do you think of the Kilmarnock game?
I think, again, the fallout of it has bothered me more than the performance. I'm slightly on Steve Clark's side in this little spat about the firemen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is kind of small time, you know, belittling them. I mean, I'd be less critical of Kilmarnock and more thinking, see the next time we do some defending drills for a week. Because
uh-huh.
I'd take a 0-0 against Paris or any, you know, pot A team. I would take that. You know, we weren't complaining when we beat Barcelona in the Champions League with 10% of the ball. You know, obviously we want Celtic to play the Celtic way. We want, you know, to punch above our weight. But we'd take a 0-0 against Man City or Barca or Bayern.
That's what I was thinking. Much as I love Brendan, if he was a bit dismissive, saying anybody could more or less set out a team to play like that, and you could stick 11 firemen in, and any team will find it difficult to break down a team that just sits and plays like that. Well, if that's the case, as you say, next season's Champions League.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Well, why don't we play like that against the pot one and the pot two teams when we go away from home? If it's so easy to just sit everybody in and do that.
Yep. I mean, yep, we'll give Anderlecht a game, maybe Bayern at home, but Paris Saint-Germain with their front three of 150 million player strikers, yeah, let's park the bus. Let's do what Kilmarnock do. Let's do what the firemen do.
I mean, the only other thing that, about that game, we can be guilty as fans of looking at the results of a team and not paying attention to performances. So, like, Everton fans want Sam Allardyce hunted. And as a non-Everton fan who doesn't watch them, I'm looking thinking, you guys were bottom three. You're now eighth. Why are you wanting rid of that manager? But maybe it is just absolutely turgid to watch. So, with the discussion of, you know, maybe Brendan might go one day, who might be, you know, because there was talk of Arsenal being interested, whatever, who might a replacement for Brendan be? More and more Celtic fans have said, look at the results of Kilmarnock under Steve Clark.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, until last week, I read a stat that Kilmarnock have got the lowest possession percentage of any team in the top flight of Scottish football since Steve Clark came in. So see the way Kilmarnock played against us on Wednesday night? That's how Kilmarnock play every single week. That wasn't a special performance against Celtic. Right. That's how Kilmarnock... That, based on the possession stats, I don't watch them all the time. Based on the possession stats, that's how Kilmarnock play against Ross County, against Motherwell, against Partick Thistle. Of let's stick everyone behind the ball, and then we'll go on a break up the park.
So, and they do have that very good centre mid.
Yeah,
what's his name? The one that played for West Brom.
Aye, yeah, whatever his name is. Aye,
he's a very good player. You know, you see him even in a, you know, a shoulder to shoulder, keeping possession and just everything. You know, he's a canny old pro that is just an absolute class above. I don't know what age he is.
I don't know.
Don't need him, but he's a good footballer.
The thing that bugged me about our performance, that, where, you know, I just said a minute ago that I have sympathy with how we played based on it's the cup final, the league's won, players won rested, we didn't have a striker. However, what was replicated in that Kilmarnock game and every draw that we've had at home this season was it wasn't just sideways passes. It's that the pass, there's times when the sideways pass is played to the guy's feet and the guy's facing up the park, so he then has to go side on to take it.
Yeah.
Even if the pass had just been 1 foot further forward,
yeah,
it would have been played in front of him when he was facing towards the Kilmarnock goal. That was the thing that got me. How many times we passed the ball to feet, and then a text from a message from St Anthony from our site on the morning or after, saying, you know, he was annoyed because we can't just keep having possession for possession's sake and, you know, passing backwards and sideways. And the other point I made to him was, but part of the reason we do that is because we're static. Nobody's moving into space. I played football from 9 to 18, and only during that time I had two decent coaches, and both of them told me that football was not about other players, football was about space. It was about finding space, playing the ball into space, anticipating where your teammate, where you could play the ball that you're, into space that your teammate could run onto. That football is that's why zonal marking makes sense to me more than man-to-man marking, because that was the only two coaches I had talked about. It's about space. And none of the Celtic players were moving into space. They were passing and then standing watching somebody else play with the football. So, yeah, it was just annoying. Just passing sideways. And you just thought you could put a bit more risk into this, because Kilmarnock can't try. We could have put a bit more risk into the forward passes. But
the thing that I would take going forward is, I mean, obviously, the whole idea of passing the ball around a lot is, you know, to make chances that are increasing your goal potential. Yeah. Closer range. Our policy at the weekend should be shoot from 30 metres every time you get the chance, because I don't really want us to win at the weekend. Do you know what I mean? But if we accidentally win at the weekend scoring a couple of 40 yarders, that'll be worth watching. I'll be pleased with that. I like a nice goal. But ultimately, if we happen to lose at the weekend, which I'd be more than happy with,
Hibs will beat
then
Rangers.
That's fine.
Hibs will beat Rangers.
Yeah, probably. So Aberdeen are safe regardless.
Yeah, Hibs will beat Rangers, so that won't matter. But I see your point there. That's the other thing that slightly irritated me, seeing the games against Aberdeen and you know, Hearts at Tynecastle last week, and the games against Rangers. We have played more forward passes, we have been more direct, and we've thumped those teams. So we'll probably do that anyway.
I think that we didn't even mention Dembele's goal in the Hearts game.
No.
Which, to go back to the criticism of the long grass, for me, we've just scored the goal of the season. You know, as much as I love Tierney's goal at the start of the season, Dembele's goal, Rogic's pass, that for me is goal of the season. And that was on long grass. So I've no issue with it.
I mean, for me, the other thing about that was how fantastic... That was Dembele of last season, that goal.
Yes. And also that scamper when he chased down the defender and lobbed the keeper and hit the bar. Because I really cannot be bothered with a 50% Moussa Dembele. You know, he is not on the list of great Celtic strikers. Whereas Dembele with a fire in his belly is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, we'll probably only got one more game of that. Ever.
Yeah.
So let's hope he turns up in the cup final. And
I did actually wonder if he knows that. And that's why suddenly I've only got 4 or 5 games left to play. I'll knock my pan in.
Yeah.
Anyways,
but that was a beautiful goal. Absolutely beautiful.
It was. A direct pass, putting risk into the ball, and the way it was brought down, and the way he just in one movement brings it down and then plays it into the opposite corner.
I was trying to describe it to, I don't know, a cousin or something, and I was like, basically it's a Bergkamp pass and a Bergkamp finish. You know, it's a Dennis Bergkamp goal, basically. It was brilliant.
So we get a game on Sunday against Aberdeen. You've already put your cards on the table of what you want. What do you expect to happen?
It's at home, yeah?
Yeah.
I can't...
Trophy day, so...
I can't see us winning it.
We normally are really comfortable on trophy day.
Yeah, we gub someone you know, we absolutely batter someone. But I just think deep down, we don't want to be doing them a favour. Maybe if the radio, you know, the wireless tells us that Hibs go up early, the whole place will just go into party mode. The players will pick up on it and we'll murder them. But if, let's say, imagine the opposite, imagine Rangers score early. You know, that's going to filter around the place and it's going to be like, right, come on, boys. You know, it's down tills. Lose 2-1.
Oh, don't forget, it's Aberdeen and Derek McInnes is a shite manager.
I'll take it. I guess Christie won't be playing. Hey, that'll be Christie played his last game for Aberdeen.
Yeah, Christie won't be playing and McInnes is a shite manager and...
Neil McGinn will play well at long last.
No, he won't.
Score a couple of goals. No.
No. Celtic will win 3-0.
Right. And hopefully Hibs win.
Yeah, Hibs will win. Hibs will beat the Huns 3-1. That's my prediction.
All right. Happily ever after.
Well, with that, because our signal's coming and going, I'll say, Anthony Money, I'll see you in 2014.
Right.
2024 right. even.
Right, okay.
6 years
Cheers.
Later.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. We had a few issues there at the end because broadband was going all over the place. They switched the router off and switched it back on, and you might have noticed a couple of crackles and one or two bits where it jumped. Hopefully it wasn't too bad. So that was St. Anthony. That was Anthony Murray back on the podcast for 6 years, but it won't be 6 years until he's back on again. Now that I found his Skype address and the telephone number that I'd lost. So this is me, Harry Brady. We're now going to have Henry, Stephen O'Donnell of Kilmarnock, and Stevie Clark for some, Brendan at the beginning with some of the comments that caused a bit of controversy. And in addition to that, don't forget, there's still plenty of stuff with the Celtic FC Foundation happening over the festive period. We've got Sunday's game, which is the trophy day, and of course that's the traditional badge day. If you've collected six of the badges, you don't want to get to 12 in a row and find that you missed out a year. So the badge on Sunday will be very special, commemorating the 10th anniversary of the passing of Tommy Burns. So get yourself along early, contribute for the badge day collection. Anyway, I'll leave you with the Kilmarnock guys. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Oh, and don't forget, there's still the Huddle Up Ben Nevis. Get on the Foundation's website and register for that. Good night and God bless. Good night.
Yeah, no, definitely. Clean sheet was always nice, but I wouldn't say it was the easiest game to watch. But we came here with different kind of levels of clubs in terms of budget, but I thought we competed well and we got a point, which a lot of teams have struggled to do this season.
Especially, as we said to the manager, they're going from Ibrox to here in the space of a couple of days. I know you've done it a couple of times this season, but it just shows that your focus is right through to the 90 minutes. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we've been disappointed with it so far, the split, because we believe we're in the top six in merit, and I think we've handled ourselves against the good teams as well as the bottom six teams, and it's been disappointing because the three games in the bounce isn't what we're hoping to do, and I think we've been unlucky in most of them, other apart from maybe Hibs. It was quite an enjoyable game, but yeah, we're a bit too open. But no, it was nice to get the point. Hopefully leads in a big game to send off or to put a good end to the tough season.
How important was it you didn't go five post split games without getting a point at all?
100%. It was very important because you want to try and keep momentum when you've got it, but you also don't want to have the momentum build up against you. And I think that's happened to teams in the past, getting beat most games, if not all. And as I said, it's only 1 point, but it'd be nice if we were able to top off with a win on Saturday.
Just sense a real mentality change within the group, coming to places like this now?
I think we believe we're good enough to compete. Obviously, if Celtic are on their top form, it's going to be very difficult for them for us to kind of hold them in for the 90 minutes, but we can compete, and I think it's important when you come up against players that realistically are better than you, that you compete and you kind of don't show them too much respect, but equally you need to give them a wee bit of respect for don't dive in, they'll punish you. And I think a couple of chances they had, I think Jamie McDonald done brilliant. I could say that's his job, but no, he done brilliant to keep us in it. And other than that, I think it's been a relatively quiet game for him, which doesn't often happen at Parkhead.
I know you've got Sunday to get out of the way, but looking ahead and looking forward to the summer and to getting into next season, how important is it going to be to try and keep the request of this group together? The manager said he's scared he's going to lose a few.
No, definitely. I think that's important for every team, but if you look across the board and every team, maybe outside Celtic, maybe Rangers, like, there's a lot of players out of contract at the Hibs and Aberdeen, and it's going to be a rebuilding job for most of us. The good news is for us is that we're all under contract other than maybe one or two, so if they go, fine, but if anybody else goes, we're getting the money for it, so hopefully we'll be investing with that money, and I'm sure with the chairman, we're going to be getting that money after doing, and then be putting any maybe new contracts for us.
Well, thanks, David. Top man.
Well, see you. Have a good summer. Take care. Take care. Cheers.
Trying to put that into a sort of frustrating nil-nil
draw. Yeah, definitely. I thought obviously one that set up for the draw, so they made it difficult for us trying to break them down. I thought we played well. We just on the night didn't have that cutting edge, that final product, but. I thought we played well in large spells.
So many times come on, I've done it against you this season where they've just sort of sat back and frustrated you at times. It can be frustration not to get that final killer pass or something, get that goal?
Yeah, I thought we were unlucky. Mm-hmm. We did have chances. Didn't just quite fall for us tonight. As I said, you said as well, that they set up in that kind of game plan to maybe not concede, maybe to get a 0-0. They've achieved that tonight, which is disappointing for us, but hopefully next time we'll know how to combat that.
The manager said it as well, it's important to go through these games now ahead of the cup final without any major injuries as well, but I suppose that's another plus point to the night.
Yeah, everyone got through it full fit, so that's a positive to take out from the night, yeah.
How much you look forward to finishing the season high against Aberdeen on Sunday?
Yeah, definitely. Taking it into the cup final as well. I think it's important to maintain our high standards and to get a result on Sunday is important to us.
How would you sum up your time here at Celtic? I know it's only a short time, but how would you sum it up so far?
Yeah, I've learnt a lot. Obviously, best club in the country, so the best coaching staff and around the best players. So I'm learning every day, trying to take in as much as possible and become a better player.
Okay, much better for that. Pre-season with the lads as
well? Yeah, that was planned to come in, get used to the environment, get used to the club and really kick on in pre-season.
To be out there on the day they Celtic clinched the league, I mean, it's, to be part of these celebrations is pretty special. How much would you like it to happen again at Hampden?
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for. I think it's done before the treble, double back-to-back, so it would be a very special moment for ourselves. So, but we've got a game on Sunday before that, so that's what we're concentrating on.
Is that a difficult one personally? I think, would you be
cup-tied? Yeah, I'm cup-tied. It's obviously a difficult one. I think the day before the window I got cup-tied against Inverness, so it's a frustrating thing about myself. But it's about the team, so I'm sure they'll do the business. Yeah.
Disappointing, I would imagine, to have to have watched last season from a distance and then you go in, it's another historic opportunity for another historic campaign to have to be cycling through some of that.
Yeah, I mean, these things happen in football. You've just got to deal with them. There's obviously cup games we've been throughout the season. Maybe I didn't get momentum because of that. But as I said, it's one of these things in football you've just got to deal with. And obviously next year, I won't have that problem.
Did you watch the final last year on TV?
Yeah.
It was quite dramatic, wasn't it?
Yeah, so hopefully it'll be easier right this time.
And Motherwell are obviously going to cause a lot of problems as well for whoever does play. I mean, they're a team that are going to play a certain style, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, we've played them a few times this season, so I'm sure we'll have a suitable game plan to go out there and try and get the win.
Is your role different then almost if you're part of the squad? I would imagine you still travel with the team and stuff. Is it almost just like trying to G people up round about you and be a positive influence in the dressing room?
Yeah, get a bit of experience from myself. That's the plan, just trying to learn as much as possible, maybe take it into next season. So if it did come around, I would know maybe handle the situation and obviously, as you said, try and be positive for the lads as well. Yeah.
Are you naturally self-confident? I mean, you came to this club, saw the central defensive options the manager had. Did you come here with the mindset, you know, I can have a chance here, I can establish myself here?
Yeah, I think you've got to have that mindset. You've got to believe in yourself. You've got to have that bit of self-confidence. I feel that I've got that, but there's obviously limits. You've got to try and keep it inside yourself, but I feel that I've got that and I don't want to lose it. And hopefully that will take me in good stead the rest of my career.
Have you kind of settled on a preferred position yet?
Yeah, in centre-half, but obviously the gaffer's asked me sometimes as tonight to play right-back. And every time that I can go out on the pitch to Celtic, I'm going to take it. So if I've got to go in and fill that role, then I feel that I'm capable to do it, and I'll take the opportunity with both hands.
You took off a couple of times like a winger in that, tonight, playing that right back role.
I know.
Charging up the flank.
Yeah, sometimes obviously I had to go a wee bit higher, so I haven't really experienced that ever. But it's just about learning, as I said, maybe different positions. So when I'm maybe playing centre half in the future, I know what the right winger or the right back's going to do. So it's just it's just gaining experience, and tonight is just another just trying to take as much information as possible and try and learn from it.
If Craig is injured and doesn't make the final, it could be a pretty big afternoon for Scott Bain. Do you think he showed his temperament for the big occasion in that game and his debut at Ibrox?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was at Dundee with Scott, so I know his capabilities, and I've got full confidence in him. I'm playing alongside him, so I'm sure if he was called upon, he would do a really good job.
Do you
Is he as laid back as he appears to be? He seems to be horizontal at times, is he?
Yeah, nah, he's just very concentrated in what he's got to do. He's a good pro and stuff, so I'm sure, as I said, if he's called upon, he'll do a really good job.
You weren't laid back when you get brought down the edge of the box. You seem pretty animated then.
No, I thought it was a free kick. Obviously, the ref thought it was different, but I'm pretty confident it was a free kick. But that's just me. I'm a winner, so if anything goes against me, then I get a wee bit animated, yeah.
To each brand new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Sunshine in your smile, bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring